next one's all yours.
Oh, no, this one. No. I was hoping that we were going to... There's a lot of strong questions. This is a question that... I'll say the rabbi would probably agree with me that there's a lot of questions on you that really we could spend an entire night discussing. And this one, the question is three words. What is God? I don't know exactly where to start on that one.
You could ask back, what is human?
Oh, that's maybe a bigger question. It's a big question. God is the creator. God is the sustainer. It's hard to answer the question because I don't exactly know what is behind the question. If somebody wants to, say if
somebody wants just to answer with a donut, the song.
And
that's how I would
answer.
Because there's so many questions on the list, and a lot of people just walked by the writing list or just sent to Eric the questions that those people aren't present. So
no, some people
sort of like a filtering process that we can use when relevant questions are asked.
Okay, I mean, this is it really is a very relevant, maybe the most relevant question on the list, but it's the question, what does it mean, what is God? Who is God? Right. Right, no, I understand. Yeah, I understand your point. I'm just saying it wouldn't be nice of me as a believer in the Hashem of the Torah to just skip over that question without but I don't know, maybe the rabbi is not afraid to try to approach to begin to introduce the
Okay. So we will do a brief synopsis of the different approaches to that question. I don't like the word "what," but okay. Let's approach it from a few different angles, because when you climb a mountain, you can get to the top from many different angles, and you're still getting to the top. So the fact that there are different approaches, one does not negate the other. But let's tackle this from a few different angles, and being that we don't know who asked the question or what they meant by the question, perhaps we will have touched upon part of what was concerning the person who wrote the question. So we'll begin, I guess, with the Kuzari. You know, we had a series of unusual events that the Torah attests never before occurred in world history, never again will occur in world history, and we have a tradition that's ironclad. In that sense, I'm not saying everything about our tradition is ironclad. You guys know me. I often discuss the areas that are gray, like the last 8 psukim of the Torah, or etc. But nonetheless, in this area, we do have an ironclad tradition. We all wear tefillin. We all put on mezuzahs on our doorposts. We all sit on the anniversary of that night and pass on the tradition to our children. We know 10 plagues to Pharaoh, the Jews left on the night. There was the plague of the firstborn. We spent 40 years in the desert and miraculously received food in ways that they are not sustainable or explainable without something beyond the forces that we recognize on this planet. A pillar of light, a pillar of cloud, mun falling down wherever we travel in the desert. The mun doesn't fall down on a Shabbos. And if you have Shabbos and Yom Tov, it doesn't fall down on Yom Tov either, and you get a double portion or a triple portion the day before. Water that comes with us wherever we go for 40 years. Again, not one day, but 40 years. So we have a period of connection where Hashem says, hey, I'm here. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. So that's one approach where our first connection to Hashem is that connection. I remember... when I dated the first girl I dated, so I don't remember how we got to this in the conversation, but I said to her, you know, I don't have sisters, and I never had girlfriends, so you're the first girl I'm talking to in my life after my mother. And ever since she looked down at me and cooed me sweetly, I knew I loved her. So that was easy. So there's this first time that you actually recognize, okay, who am I talking to? And that's Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, so that's one approach. We have a point of revelation. We have a point of connection. That's the approach of the Kuzari. We have often discussed in class the philosophical approach. The philosopher, the Kuzari, presents man comes from man, comes from man, comes from a frog, comes from where? You reach a question mark. You say there's something that's not within our system. There's something that's beyond our comprehension because everything we know of comes from something else. So there has to be something that's not within that set, that encompassment of our logic. And that's our first definition of God. There's something out there that we don't understand, right? There's more to it than that. But that's a number one. There is something beyond what we understand, because as far as we understand, we got a problem. Like, where does all this come from? So we come back and say, okay, that question is my answer. Does that prove anything? Does that prove he's still around? He cares about? No, that's okay. So that's a second approach we discussed. There are more approaches. I think we should maybe conclude with what I have to say. Maybe the rabbi has more to say. But from my end, we have a point which the Ram, the Ramban, the Chazanish, the Sefer Amidot, I'll get to you in a second, Daniel. Everyone seems to work the same direction from the verse in Psalms where David HaMelech describes how he doesn't begin to understand how his own system works. We don't understand ourselves. That's why I said jokingly that when he asked, what is God, I would ask back, what is man? Because we don't begin to understand that which is the soul, that which is life, that which is within us that keeps this whole mechanism running within our mind, within our heart. What is life? We don't really have an answer for that. We know step 2 and 3 and 4, or maybe step 10 and 12 and 14, we know how the heart functions and the mind functions, but we don't know what's the energy that actually starts it running. We don't know the source of energy. Where we come back to the Rambam's philosophical description of the force that moves the wheels or keeps the cycles running. So yes, we have all kinds of theories about the planets and the forces at play, but what starts it all as far as energy? I'm not talking about matter and creation. That was the second answer. When we speak about the third answer, when we speak about that energy which is life within us, that's perceiving everything that's going on here, that has to ask itself, is anyone real but me? But I know, I think, therefore I am. I know I'm real. I don't know what about me is real, but I know that the thought process that's actually perceiving and participating in this conversation, that's real. I think the rabbi is real. But I think all of you are real. But that's something which is beyond proof, right? We work with that as an assumption. By the same token, that connects us to the point that I didn't create myself. That much I know. So that's that basic proof of Avraham Avinu. You walk in the forest, you see a house with a candle lit. Someone lit that candle. So before you go to the forest and the candle, and before you look like the Chazon Ish spends his first chapters of Emunah Bitachon, saying that just perceive the order of nature. If you look at the amazing things in nature, you see God. You don't have a definition beyond that, but you see order. You can't say there's no order. If you'd have eyes in your toes, you wouldn't function the same way. If you'd have one ear as opposed to two ears, you would not function the same way. You could not gauge distance if you had only one eye. As we studied the first chapters of Emunah U'Bitachon, the tremendous order we witness in the world, and I know I didn't do it. I didn't do anything about myself. So that leads me to a perception that there is a creator. And that brings us back to the concept we discussed in the Kovetz Ma'amarim. Rav Elchanan Wasserman said that's why even non-Jews are held accountable to the Noahide laws. Because as much as you'll philosophize, there's still a basic concept that's, so to speak, more simple than everything else. And that is, there's a God. You know that. You know you're here, you know there's a God. All the other philosophical arguments are complications. But if you take a step back, you know there's a simple answer because there's something that's staring you in the face. And that, Rav Elchanan Wasserman said, is what obligates even a non-Jew and even someone out in Mozambique to the seven Noahide laws. We question that. I'm not going into the seven Noahide laws. But as far as Hashem, so that's, I think, those are three approaches, what we discuss now. Kuzari, as far as our meeting with Hashem in Yetzias Mitzrayim, the philosophical of There is something beyond my perception of nature. There's something here that brought all this about. And then what creates all this energy, all of life, all of, I know I didn't do it myself, that obvious answer, okay, I'm here, so something brought me here. Without discussing whether all of you are here, I'm not going into that, I don't know. I don't know.
You guys have a great rabbi, I don't know. I try to control myself with those types of comments, but I'll just add on the third point that what the rabbi said, that something that also just with a little story, personal story, that when one is young, so when one has their health, don't have to even be young, but right towards the, not at the beginning of life and not at the end of life. So I think it's easier to kind of take that third point for granted, that like, okay, maybe I came from somewhere, but ever since I've known, you know, I wake up every morning, no problem, go to sleep at night, you know, eat, the systems run pretty well, and you know, don't have to think about it too much. I really have to think about other things, how I'm going to get food, how I'm going to entertain myself, etc. But a lot of times when a person is approaching or he has some type of experience with a family member or somebody else that he knows, an end of the life, the passing of a person, a person is really confronted with this big question of like, what made them alive? They're not alive now. I remember the first time I saw a dead body, which is an invigorating experience. I don't suggest you go hanging around dead bodies, but you know, if Hashem puts you in such a situation, I was a student in Austin, Texas, and Chabad Shliach, who was the rabbi of the town, basically, because there wasn't really so much of a community. So he used to call me in the middle of the night for all kinds of things. And when you live in Israel, you don't really get to be involved with these types of things because there's a million other people that are doing those holy tasks. But he said that there was a Jew, a Jewish man, who had been married to a non-Jewish woman, and he had lived totally cut off from any Jews most of his life, and he died young. And there was nobody that knew him and nobody to do shmira on the body. Then when a Jewish body dies, someone's supposed to be with the body until they're buried. We don't just leave it alone. So he called me at 2 in the morning, right? And he said, "Do you mind coming down to the, you know, to the what do you call it? To the
morgue,
right? It wasn't the morgue. It was a
funeral home."
And so I said, "Yeah, no problem. Of course, huge mitzvah, you know." And I went, and I couldn't sleep the whole night because it's a very intense thing to be in such a place. At that time, Agav, by the way, my grandfather, Aleph Shalom, was the head of the Chevra Kedisha in Austin. And so there's another experience after that. But just to get to the point, so I stayed the whole night outside the room of where the body was. And in the morning, I thought, because I'd been up all night, I was a little bit confused. And I accidentally walked into the room. A door was open. I thought that they had moved the body. I don't remember exactly what I thought, but I ended up going in the room. And there I saw the body. And I just gasped for air. It was the most unbelievable. I was, you know, it was like a movie, just walking backwards. You know, what did I just see? And I was out, my heart was pounding, you know, and for like 15 minutes, I couldn't catch my breath. And at the same time that I'm trying to catch my breath, I'm trying to ask myself, what just happened, and why was that so powerful? I mean, the dead bodies that we see in movies are not really dead bodies, but, you know, but it's more or less the same idea, right? The answer, the only answer that I could give myself was that I've never seen a body without a soul. Without a soul actually giving life to the body at that moment. We have different teachings about where the soul actually is, around the body, surrounding the body, right? But that, when a person sees that and experiences that, you realize that something was there, which science doesn't really have an answer for what that is. What is that life? And that, like the rabbi said, is a very powerful experience. I just experienced before Pesach, my grandmother passed away, Shalom, and as my grandfather was recounting to me all the details of the experience, you know, he was encountered with experiences with that he had never had to think about things before. He had never, and it was very, very powerful for the entire family to experience that. And so I think that in almost in an eerie way, the experience of death brings people closer to that basic emunah, that there has to be something, there has to be something that's powering all this.